Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work. Almost messed that bit up then, Joel. As always, I'm joined by producer Joel.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, Joel. What's happening?
You know, this and that. Keeping busy. What's locking down.
What's new? What's new in your life?
You ask me this every week and nothing's changed since
Mark. It's the trouble since lockdown.
Yeah.
Yeah. So well, same for me, Joel. Very similar vibes. A few online gigs.
Nice. Yeah. How are they going?
Good. Thanks. Yeah. I enjoy them very much. But the good news is we have got stuff to talk about because we've had a good week on the old podcast, Joel. We've got a lot of feedback from the last episodes, and I thought I could sort of tell you about
plenty
some
of plenty
of
new listeners.
We've had lots of new
hello,
listeners.
Hello, guys.
If you're new, hello. Thanks for joining. Loads of great episodes for you to go and check out. But let's listen to this one first because this is the new one. This is current. And we've got some feedback from last week. Would you like to hear some feedback from last week,
I'd
Joel?
I'd love to. I'm aching to hear it.
This podcast is shit. No, not that one. Only joking. So basically, I put up a... Okay, this one first. There's loads. I'll just go through them, Joel.
Go.
So Alf, friend of the show, Alf, previous guest on one of the Edinburgh shows. Mm-hmm. So during the podcast, I made a joke about... just an ad lib joke that I was talking about walking, and then if you go the other way round, it seems like a new walk. And then I made a joke about not backwards, wasn't walking backwards. And Al thinks that's a good joke, and I should try and work that into a bit.
Okay.
So I was thinking I could say, I always go walking the same way, but sometimes I go the other way around, but I keep backing into stuff.
Yeah, I keep bumping into stuff.
Bumping's fine. Oh, would they still...
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe not. They'd have to, wouldn't they? Because it wouldn't make any sense to bump into stuff just walking a different route.
No.
Yeah, that's fine. So there's a nice little bit of feedback there. And also... another joke that I was talking about was my parrot joke, where I say my parrot sits at home watching the Dave Channel, repeating everything.
Yeah.
And it works okay.
Yeah.
But not like, it's not a big hitter. And so he said, I called my parrot UK TV Gold because he's always repeating everything. In fairness, I could have just called him Dave. Which I think is quite a nice idea.
Yeah, that's good.
But I think for me, because I know Alf's act, and Alf's act is sillier than mine. Mm-hmm. So him calling his parrot UK TV Gold, I think you go, oh yeah. But I think if I'd said that, it'd be like, oh, what? That's a bit of a weird setup, whereas I like my setups to be in reality. Mm. But I do like the idea of the name bit. So I was thinking maybe something simple as, so same setup as my one. So my parrot sits at home repeating everything. Mm-hmm. So I called him Dave.
Yeah, that works.
Which I think is very succinct and punchy. So I reckon that might be punchier than my original.
Try it. Give it a go.
So I quite like that. And then someone else, totally randomly, also made a similar suggestion. A bit later, though, so they're a bit late to the party. Maybe the joke at the end could be, I've got a parrot called Dave, he repeats everything, which is the opposite way round to what I just said. But I think I think it's better the other way around. As in...
Yeah.
It might not be. But I think he repeats everything. You're spreading that laugh out because as soon as you say repeats, they sort of get the joke and then you finish it. Mm-hmm. Whereas with, so I called him Dave. Dave is the full bang of the bunch.
Dave. Yeah.
So that was good little feedback. Thanks for that, everybody. You want to hear some more feedback, Joel? Or do you want
to crank
on? Okay, more feedback. I put up a video of Julian and I don't know if you saw a little clip. Go check that out on the socials at Jokes with Mark Simon. Jokes with Mark. Just Jokes with Mark. Don't know my own social. The podcast is Jokes with Mark Simmons. And so that was when we went through the discussion of I spotted when Julian was talking some wordplay. Oh, what was it? It was to do with Hawk out on a limb. So I was doing so. Was it? No, that wasn't what we were talking about. Flipping heck, okay. What was it? Oh, God. Hang on.
I'm looking.
It's about parrots talking. Yeah, so Julian said about parrots can talk. why is that not a bigger deal?
Yeah.
And I spotted the wordplay, you can talk. So we worked all the way through it, and we got to my parrot had a go at me for not being a very good parrot trainer. I said, you can talk.
Yeah.
Good joke. But there's been another great suggestion from Simon Lomas, another good joke writer. He said, love this. What about your parrot says you're always stating the obvious? So that's good. So my parrot says I'm always stating the obvious. I said, you can talk.
Yeah. Another nice. Good joke. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's two good options there. So with the parrot, that last one, the you can talk bit doesn't have two points because you don't know that the parrot also states the obvious. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's kind of what they do, isn't it?
Well, I mean,
they don't say anything particularly complicated or...
No, I guess so.
They just repeat back, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, in that case, then it's even better.
Polly wants a cracker.
Yeah. And he does want a cracker.
Always.
It's obvious.
And Jolie wants to crack on with today's guest.
I got the vibe that you want to crack on. I'm enjoying chatting to you, Joel, because this is like a mini podcast in one. But you want to crack on. Okay.
It's just because there's so much great stuff to hit listeners' ears.
You just listen to it. Oh, good stuff. Yeah, I remember it being a great episode. Well, let's do it then. Who have we got this week then, Joel?
We've got the supreme Chris Turner.
Chris Turner, all the way from America.
Wow, America.
Oh, that rhymed, didn't it? Which is quite good because he is a freestyle rapper as well as a great joke writer. But you'll hear all about that now. I was going to ask you about the jokes because, like, one-liners and wordplay isn't really an American thing. And I've often wondered if I did any gigs in America whether they'd be on board with it, because I can imagine with the rap works much better
over here, yeah,
because also you're English, which is even funnier to them that you can do this,
yeah,
because of what they think of English people. So like how does the wordplay go down, or have you changed how you do things in your stand-up?
So I mean, I think there's a lot of... I think Americans are used to one-liners, right? If you think about Jeselnik, I mean, I know it's not one-liners, but they think of it as gags, right? And you've got Stephen Wright, obviously he's weird. And yeah, exactly. So they get that. And I found that, like, initially... Like, I came to America before I moved here doing stuff off the back of, like, this YouTube clip of one-liners because people were getting in touch, like, wow, these are really smart. Oh, like, let's do some shows. But I stopped doing just one-liners or just deadpan one-liners so early on. I think, like, from just chats with various people, but like Gary Delaney was like, look, here's some advice that took me 3 years to learn. If you are going to be, this is before I was even doing the rap, right? He was like, if you want to do better opening, because I was just having trouble opening gigs with deadpan one-liners, obviously. And he was like, you just need to loosen up. You need to have fun with the jokes. You need to laugh at your own jokes and be more jovial. And it was then my first Edinburgh show had like, was loads of one-liners, but then a 15-minute story, which I enjoyed much more than the one-liners because it felt more real. Not to denigrate one-liners, obviously, but like Yeah, I just enjoyed telling that story. So I just started doing, it was when I started doing Edinburgh shows. I was just like, oh no, I'm just going to do longer bits. And obviously a long joke is just one liners tied together, right? Like it's, yeah, that's how it is, or how I was doing it. So over here, one liners still work. And if I'm doing a short set, I might just come out and just do some gags.
Did you have to have a good look at what you'd got and what would translate?
Yeah, it's like, you know, certain jokes you know aren't going to work because they don't know what it means. Like, you know, in the UK, like, I love my A Christ Is For Life, Not Just For Dogmas joke. But in America, like, that would just, no one would ever get that. So,
yeah. I don't know how the main thing that saying.
No, they don't. No.
So you wouldn't know that. Did you know that beforehand, or did you try it and just go, oh, right, they don't get this?
I think, like, when I started gigging in Australia, I used to just send my jokes in advance to friends over there and be like, tell me what wouldn't work. So I did the same over here. Mm. I just asked comics, like, or Americans. Although you have to be careful you ask, because some people are just, they don't know anything. So you tell them a joke and they'd be like, no, we don't have that. And then I like realize, you do know, you're just an idiot. The main change over here is, one, like, your timing changes. You have to slow it down. I thought I was, like, bombing my first few American gigs, and then I realized I was just going too fast because the accent, or, like, this kind of... I don't know, I remember, like, seeing an American comic, or a clip of a comic called Geechee Guy, who did one-liners, and he'd, like, call them joke grenades, and he'd, like, have this thing where he'd tell a joke, and then in the gap between them getting the punchline and him having delivered it, he'd like throw a mime grenade into the audience. And I was like, oh, they do just take longer to get that joke.
Right.
Even though it's not necessarily, like, some of them were like quite smart jokes, but it wasn't a hard joke. But I was like, and obviously a lot of the gimmick is, you know, you throw out and they're like, they wait for it to land and they laugh. But I'd find that I'd do jokes and I wouldn't explain them enough. And so it's when you see American comics being like, they do a punchline and it won't get the laugh, and then they go, that's fucking crazy, and then the audience laugh, and it's like, oh, you've explained that that's a crazy thing to happen. I just make the jokes a bit more obvious. Like, you'd add a, like, you know, a joke of mine I used to do all the time was like, I was doing a gig and there was this woman in the front row, and she was from Papua New Guinea, and she had her son's foreskin on a chain around her neck. You know, I can't remember how this joke goes, but like, you know, she said it was a traditional custom, but her son looked very uncomfortable. And I do that joke over here and he gets a big laugh, right? Whereas in America, you do that and then, and you do it, you wouldn't really get a bigger laugh, and you go, because it's still attached. And then they'd be like, oh, we get it now.
Oh my God. Because over here, if you explained it, that would kill it dead.
Yeah.
Wow. So they sort of react as in, because it's a different sort of laugh if you've explained it. So it's like, oh God, you're so fun, you're so clever. And that's what they're reacting to.
Well, I think some people would get it, right? And they actually feel smart for getting it. It's like when you do a gig in like a place that speaks great English but isn't an English native language. So like Norway, Holland, Germany, if you do a joke, I always found that you do a smart joke, and the audience wouldn't laugh. They would applaud because what they're doing is they're going, I understood that joke. I am very well
educated. Applauding themselves.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you get that in America a lot more. I also found that I had to stop. Like, my opener in the UK, and I mean, I still do it over here occasionally. I have to write a new one now because my opener was a Trump opener that was good because they never saw it coming. Which actually was, so it was the one about like, oh, it's another foreskin joke, which is why I had to stop doing my foreskin around the neck joke, because I was like, I can't have two foreskin jokes up in the show. I'd come on and just be like, oh, hey, I'm British. So like, well, I know. Okay. This is my second opener, because I always talk about not having a chin. That I had to stop doing more than one self-deprecating joke in America because I started getting encouraging rounds of applause, right? So I do a self-deprecating joke, like, oh, I can't grow a beard, don't even have a chin, blah, 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 blah. And then if I do like another self-deprecating joke, like I had this weird throwaway one I'd do at small gigs. Because like so many LA shows are like little bar shows, and I'd be like, oh, hey, this is really cool. Like, it's a really intimate little venue. There's like 20 of us here. I like the idea that when I'm really famous, you can all say to your friends, oh my God, that comedian. I had no idea that he'd ever do that well. You know, it's just some throwaway thing that I do in like Edinburgh when you're doing a shit little venue.
Yeah.
And I do that joke. And even if that was only the second or third joke of the set, I'd get people in the audience being like, no, no, buddy, you're really good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you're going to make it. And so you have to stop being self-deprecating.
They're so positive.
Yeah, well, they're like, no, you can do it, which is the difference between American and British crowds, basically, yeah. Right? You're on stage in Liverpool, they're like, go on then, mate, be funny. Whereas over here, they're like, you're on stage, you must be funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, the opener over here, which I have to change, I guess. Actually, it'll still work, but I just go, you know, oh, so I don't have a chin. I do have a foreskin, though. Fun laugh, because, oh, we're different. You guys don't have foreskins, you're circumcised. I did some research. I know why you guys circumcise your young men. It's because you collect all the foreskins and you knit them together and you make a president. And everyone's like, ha, 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 ha. And then it would work any state I did it in. Like,
even places if they went, that like Trump.
Well, because then I'd go, hey, calm down. I didn't say which president. I wrote that joke 6 years ago. And then they'd all laugh. You fucking idiots. So I mean, the thing is, that'll still work because, you know,
yeah, whoever,
Biden's, if he is the president, Biden still looks like a sack of foreskins. but yeah, so like you have to change it a bit. Mm. But one of the things I found, especially because I came over here and I was, you know, done, you know, 8-9 years of comedy, so I was more comfortable on stage. One of the things I got feedback on really early on was like, you're so nice and friendly and likable, which I presume is the accent. I presume is me being more comfortable now than with being myself on stage. Whereas in the past, it was like, oh, one-liners. Because you know, like what, when you're 19, 20 performing in fucking Jonglers, you need this steel. I couldn't go on stage and be like, hi guys, I've got some little jokes to tell you. I have to be kind of like, oh, he's weird. So I like that. And I think that's different to a lot of American comics who are, you know, they come over here, we'll come over to the UK and we're like, oh wow, they're so authoritative and hard-nosed and like just punchy,
assertive, aren't they?
Yeah. And I would say that, you know, even though there's not necessarily that many one-liner comics over here, I mean, obviously there are, like Mike Kaplan, you know, it's great gags, but
I need to write these names down because I don't know a lot of the one-liner guys over there.
Mike Kaplan's brilliant.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. MYQ Kaplan.
Oh.
And this kind of like, they are gaggy because really American weekend comedy clubs, even if the gags are weak, like you'll see an act up there and they are hitting like a punchline every 10 or 15 seconds a lot of the time. So it feels like a one-liner thing, even if those punchlines are kind of like C-grade punchlines that you're like, well, that wouldn't work if you just said, here's a joke. So I think, you know, while there might not be as many one-liners, they do like this kind of quick, gaggy structure.
And I guess it's nice to be different on a lineup because I find a lot of Americans are fairly similar in style. So if you are...
Yeah, LA specifically is good as well as New York because the lineups, especially compared to, I mean, the UK, right? You do a weekend gig and you're like, oh, cool, four white guys. This is great. And I would hope it has changed more recently, but like... in LA, there'd be shows where I was the one white person, or I mean, I was definitely the only British person ever. And then you start, you know, start gigging with Chris Martin, the other British person, because we both live in LA. And it's like, no, my joke. I mean, we did a show at the Comedy and Magic Club, which is my favorite club, where there was like five foreigners on a lineup of 10 comedians. It was like Ismo, who's Finnish, Yeah, it was quite funny to be like, oh, we're outnumbering you guys for once. But yeah, the diversity here is good because you see more perspectives and then you write better jokes. That was a weird thing coming here. Like, I was like, in the UK, you never talk about race because we don't talk about race in the UK. Over here, it's like, I'd see comedians do material. I'm like, initially, I was like, oh, wow, that seems really racist. Why is the crowd laughing at this? And then you're like, oh, no. In America, they talk about race on comedy stages because it's the only place they want to ever talk about it because they never discuss it, you know, in their fucking day-to-day lives or acknowledge anything. Whereas, like, there's a lot of black comics who will talk about, you know, white people do this, whatever, which I guess, you know, seems like a hack thing. But I don't know, like, when it's done well, it's good. And so I'd find out that talking about being British, obviously, right, you talk about that. But two, talking about different races in America, like from my perspective, this makes it sound like I'm so insightful, but like, I was like, oh, you can say that you saw this and you can be like, oh, this Cuban guy came up to me and it they get the joke more. Whereas I think if you would do it on stage in the UK and you were like kind of, oh, this Jewish guy came up to me, people were like, why have you said he's Jewish? What's going on?
Yeah, yeah, they get tense straight away, no matter what it's yeah. about.
And this makes it sound like I've turned into some kind of real right-wing comedian, which I genuinely haven't. It was interesting to be like, oh, this is kind of...
So have you...
Works better over here.
When you've written a joke since you've been over there, have you tried any over here that don't work? Or would you just know roughly, I can't talk about that over here?
A hard thing... with like doing Edinburgh shows when you're writing Edinburgh shows in America, right? Like, so like the only place I'm gigging in a year most of the time is America. And then maybe I'll go to Australia and do Perth Fringe there, 'cause I really love doing that. And that's where I like write and work on a lot of shows. It's hard to do material. There's some material I'll just write. I'm like, this will work in Edinburgh, but I can't try this in America because they won't get it. Like, I had an opening routine about tea that if I do here, they don't get it. But it was like the opening routine of like my Edinburgh show like 3 years ago, which was just really fun. It was like an observational routine about tea. Could never try it over here. I had to just go back and be like, I need like two previews to work on this material.
Right.
But then there's routines that are really fun to do over here. Like, I had one that closed that show about living in America, which was all about American football, but really it was about the attitude towards the fact that Black Americans are, you know, they get college scholarships to play American football. It was an Uber driver who told me this guy was like, oh, hey, what are you? He was like, what do you do? He's like, oh, you play college football. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, do you still like play? And he's like, oh no, it fucked up my brain. I can't. And I was like, oh wow, that's awful. He's like, yeah, the NFL is the modern day slave plantation because all the teams are owned by white guys telling Black guys to go and hurt each other until they don't function anymore. And I was like, oh shit. And then I was,
and you he's know, driving
I was
you.
Like, actually, yeah, afterwards I was like, oh, I need to write a routine about this. So I wrote this routine about CTE, chronic traumatic.
That's really topical over there as well.
Yeah, I mean, especially it was like, yeah, 3 years ago. And I do this routine about American football and I would just lay into American football. And what you'd get is a room divide where half of them would be like so vehemently with you, like, yes, 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 yes. And then you'd get all these football fans who were like, no, how dare you say this about my favorite sport. But it really kind of sparked up a room and it was really fun to do. And then I was like, great, this is like, so it was like my closer before the wrap, because the wrap's always the closer. And I was like, okay, I'm putting this in my Edinburgh show. And then I'd do it over here. And it was still a good routine with good jokes, but you felt that just because people didn't, they felt, oh, I don't know about the NFL, which it annoys me
also
because you're
CTE
like
CTE as well.
But you explain that. But they understand about sports concussions. They understand about, you know, the history of race in America. They understand. And there's that thing where you bring up a topic people don't know and they're like, oh, I don't know about this, so I'm not going to really pay attention, therefore I'm not going to laugh. Right. And that was always annoying because I was like, well, I'm doing this routine because it is good and I think it is important for you guys to know what America is really like. Because I think most people in the UK wouldn't know about like college athletics and how, you know, these kids, the only way they can go to college is to get a scholarship and then they aren't paid for it. And they get their brain fucked up. So
it's absolutely mad. Something recently, I think maybe it was a podcast I was listening to and they were saying, maybe it was something about the election, but I can't remember, but they were saying how the colleges make, well, like they've all got stadiums full of people watching this sport and the kids don't,
more people watch college football than professional football,
yeah, and the kids don't make any money out of it. And it was someone was arguing the case to pay them and I can't remember what it was I was listening to, but it's mad. And like you say, they're getting injured and then they're, you know, there was big, their bright futures, and then they're driving the Uber.
Yeah So yeah, there's stuff that I'll do over there that doesn't work over here, but you know, I think I always had that because I'd always write shows in Australia, then do them in Edinburgh. And so there's always that kind of switch. You're like, oh, okay, that's annoying. The first, you know, 10 minutes of the show I did in Australia would never be the same in the UK because really, you know, you'd always kick off with the local stuff, do a McIntyre, right? Always open up, be like, hey, let's talk about you guys and all the weird things you do. You can't do that in Edinburgh. Also, if you're doing an Edinburgh show, don't open by talking about Edinburgh people because they've heard all that material before from every other comedian.
With the CTE routine, that doesn't sound like it's a wordplay sort of routine, was it?
No.
It was just like an observation that...
Well, yeah, and one, that's at the end of the show, right? So you don't... It can be more like, here's some meat, here's something I want to talk about. But also, like, the last show I was working on, like, you know, I've kind of got two shows I was working on before lockdown. One was a musical comedy show, which I'd done in Australia, and I'd been working on for like a year and a half, and I'd done in New York. And that was because a producer friend was like, hey, you should do a kind of Bo Burnham style jokes, raps, freestyle, poetry yeah. show. And I was like, oh, cool. So I started writing it, and I really liked it, and it worked well. And that's, you know, one separate show, which was literally like, start with a funny rap, do a freestyle. Here's another funny rap. Here's some one-liners with some air horns behind them. And then here's some more, you know, structure and fun stuff. Yeah. And like, that was what I was going to be doing at Edinburgh this year, gone, right? But because I'd been working on that for about a year and a half, I was like, well, I still should write a new show. So I went to Australia and I did the rap show, but I also did, I was like, I'm just going to do an hour of stand-up stuff that I've been writing and working on that I haven't necessarily been doing in clubs, but material I've been working on for a year. And that show was really, really fun. But I don't think I'm probably going to tour it, because by the time I get round to touring a show that's not the rap show, that material will now be 2.5 years old. And I'm like, meh, whatever.
Yeah.
And there's bits of it that I'll put in the rap show, because I was still talking about like hip hop a lot. But like the opening routine of that was just a story, because, and it had gags in, but it was just a story of like, oh, here's a, you know, here's a weird Uber ride I had, which is such an LA routine, but doing in Australia was just really nice. And it was interesting. I found that like when I did a club set in LA, I'd always kick off with some quick gags, then do a rap, right? Because like often the sets are quite short over there. It's only when you're on the road that you're doing like, you know, 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
If I did that, if I did a couple of quick jokes, then a story, I always felt the audience were a bit weirded out. They were like, wait, we thought you just did quick jokes. Why are you telling a story now? Whereas if you walk on and start with a story, they're like, oh, this guy tells stories. Cool. They don't like it when you change. So,
yeah, so is that Australian show was much gags after that.
Yeah, I think so. So it was much less. You'd either have to find a framing device rather than like, oh, here are some gags. You have to be like kind of, oh, I was chatting to my friend the other day. Mm. He's a bit weird. Like, you know, he was telling me, and then just do some one-liners, which is a structure I used to do. I used to talk about my brother.
Three mics.
And then I just do like weird one-liners. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that works. But that's because you're setting out. Mm. That it's this is the show, it's going to be weird, and they like that. But yeah, that Australian one, it was like, it was just pretty much just stories, and I'd have a couple of gags thrown in. But I think that's what my Edinburgh shows have been, the last two ones especially. It would always, I would never just be like, here's one liners it was just, I'm going to tell jokes. And I think I got better at that, but it's still something I'm, you know, less experienced at, because I've not done it as long, but I enjoy it.
Yeah. Have you got any stuff down that you couldn't get to work? Anything for whatever reason?
So the there's a joke that I've always loved.
Cool.
Which I turned into a joke that did work. But like, in the same way that my Crisis for Life, Not Just for Dogmas joke, I'm like so proud of. I'm like, that is a joke that it's a transpositional pun. There's very few of those in the English language. And I think this is the one of the genuinely, you know, funny ones. And I was like, I'm proud that is a joke I've come up with. In the same way, like, you know, there's jokes that we have that as comedians, like, say your joke goes into the popular consciousness. It was like a joke of mine. One of my earliest jokes was, I'm friends with 25 letters of the alphabet. I don't know why. Yeah. Right. And it's a joke that I used to get texted. And I was like, no, I wrote that joke.
I have that with one of mine. That's memed everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did that irritate you to start with? Which one is it? And my one's I went to Waterstones, asked a woman for a book about turtles. She said hardback, and I was like, yeah, and little heads. It's everywhere.
Yeah, great. And it's those jokes that then people start saying you've stolen them, because they're like, oh no, I've seen that in a list of Mitch Hedberg jokes, right?
Yeah.
Because a good joke like that, people just, they're like, well, I'm going to attribute that to, like the 25 letters one, I'm pretty sure everyone would be like, that's a Tim Vine joke, that. So those jokes, initially you get annoyed, but now I'm like, well, I'm not telling that on stage anymore. Yeah. And I used to then do routines about the joke itself, like being this thing. So that was then fun. Yeah. Jokes enter the popular consciousness. That's cool. And then, you know, I'm nice to have these little gleaming examples of jokes that I like. But so this is a joke that I'm so proud of. I'm like, this is the perfect joke. It's short. It's brilliant. And I would be lucky if 5% of an audience ever laughed at it. So just to settle the fact that you're probably not going to laugh at it, right?
Yeah,
anyone listening is going to be like, this ain't even funny. No, it's not.
Is it
clever? The joke is just, it's clever. Yeah. It's numismatists. They're tender lovers.
Okay, yeah, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, yeah. A numismatist is a coin collector. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
There's the issue.
And, like,
I tried it in
different formats. Wow. I was like, kind of, you know, oh, I slept with a numismatist. He was a tender lover. And I was always like, are people not laughing because I'm saying I slept with a man? Then you're like, oh, no, people just don't know what numismatist... Like,
my cat
is called
collector.
Colonel... I don't like it. I'll tell you what I turned
it into.
Okay,
cool.
But, like, my cat is called Colonel Widdershins because my wife and I, we got a cat and we're like, oh, what should we call it? And I was like, I really like the word Widdershins. And we assumed everyone would know the word Widdershins. Widdershins it means anti-clockwise in old Scotch, right? It's from Macbeth. Okay. Quite often, like, Widdershins is a very witchy word. This is not saying my wife's one of those kind of, oh, I'm a witch, which is what everyone fucking is on Instagram now. But people just, every time the vet calls out, they're like, Colonel Widdershins? And we're like, oh, no one knows what this is. Which is my blindness to not know that everyone knew what numismatist was. I used to just do that on stage occasionally as a throwaway. In the same way that, like, one of my favorite jokes I do is, you know, when I was 12, I was listening to a lot of Dr. Dre. Dr. Dre, when you're 12, is quite a lot to take in. I thought it was pronounced Dr. E. And you'd get your laugh. And then sometimes I would add on the tag, and this would get a laugh, the setup. I'd go, who knows what they called him before? It's two PhDs. And that was an accidental joke because I was setting up this punchline. I'd just mutter, mystery. That was the punchline. And that wouldn't get the laugh. The two PhDs would get the laugh. And it was maybe about five. I was doing an Edinburgh run. It was a show my agent put together. And after about seeing it six times, he went, I just got that mystery joke. And I'm like,
oh, wow.
What's wrong with all of you? Like, but the audience never got it. So...
That's so
there's
weird.
Those jokes that sometimes I'll throw in for myself, like, and I didn't mind that, like, especially in an Edinburgh show, in a 20-minute set, if you have a joke that doesn't hit, people immediately lose confidence, especially in the UK. In America, if they don't get a joke, if I do a new bit of material or something and don't get it, I would literally just make a joke. I'd just be like, I suppose you don't have that over here, or just some kind of dumb thing.
If they don't laugh,
I'd just go... that my accent, I'll be like, oh, if you didn't find that joke funny, at least my accent's interesting or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Why do you think they don't get the mystery? Because you've set it up because you've...
Because I think the joke has come. They're like, Dr. E, that was the joke, right?
Right.
And then it feels like a throwaway. What are they called before? It's two PhDs. Mystery.
And does that get a PhD line?
The two PhDs would, yeah.
But
which I never understood.
I can't understand why they don't get that because it's perfect.
Because you're not hitting it as a punchline, right?
Right.
If you hit it as a punchline, it gets a groan.
Yes, if you go, Mr. E.
Yeah. Which, you know, works if you're delivering it in a certain way. Like, again, it would work for Tim Vine. It would work for, you know, people who are hitting jokes like that. In the same way that, like, there are jokes. I mean, this is a joke that, again, starting out, a joke that used to kill for me, like it used to be my kind of closing one-liner if I wasn't doing my periodic table closer, which was like where I'd recite the elements and then do the element surprise thing.
Yeah.
And this joke was, it was my brother-in-law. I was talking about my brother who had Asperger's, which was all a lie, right? Like, like I don't have a brother. I used to work with kids with Asperger's and I wrote a lot of Asperger's jokes, but then I couldn't obviously say, hey, these kids with Asperger's say these weird things.
Yeah,
because my brother, I can mock him. So I do all these jokes about my brother, which were always the smartest jokes in my set. I'd just say he said them. And then if people laughed at them so much, sometimes I'd just go, fuck you, I wrote that joke. He's not real, which would ruin it, but it would make me feel proud. Idiot. So I had this joke about... it was a joke that I'd written in a notebook and my then girlfriend, not now wife, now ex-girlfriend, had like was reading through my little joke notebook and was like, this joke's really funny. And I was like, I looked at it and I was like, that is a shit joke. And she's like, no, you should try it on stage. I was like, you're mental. If I did it on stage, people would boo me off the stage. And the joke was my brother, for Christmas, my brother bought me a laminator. It's a machine that kills baby sheep.
And that is a good joke.
Thank you. But when I wrote it, I think I'd written it down as, oh, I've got a machine that kills baby sheep.
A laminator.
It's a laminator, which gets you the groan, right? And it's that whole thing of puns. You put the punchline in the middle and then explain it. And
the
then...
reality, the logic in the first bit, a normal sentence.
Yeah. That's a good way of explaining it. So that was one that I thought wouldn't work. I never even tried it, right? But I don't mind having a joke that only one person laughs at if it's an Edinburgh show.
Yeah.
Because I'll make a joke about that and I'll put jokes in the show. I'm like, usually three in a show. And when I was working with like Steve Hall or Dan Atkinson have like worked with me on my Edinburgh shows. Mm. Never like writing jokes. Cause like in the past I've worked with comics where I was like, oh, hey, can you like add some jokes to the show? Like Stephen Grant is such a good joke writer. And I was like, hey, can you have a look through this show and see if there's any jokes pop up? And every joke he put in was great, but it didn't feel right to me. I was like, that's not a joke I would make. That's not to say Stephen can't write for people's voice. I think he was writing for the type of jokes that I would have used to do. Mm. And it's like, I've had times where people have given me a joke, like Pete Otway gave me a joke years ago. We were like driving the car. He's like, oh, if there's this joke I've written, I don't think I can make it work for me. It feels like it would work for you.
Yeah.
Again, because it was like a one-liner. And I tried it on stage and it like got a laugh, but it felt weird because I was like, that's not my joke, is it? Mm. So stop doing it. I mean, the joke's great. It's I've learned a new technique that I'm hoping will give my girlfriend multiple orgasms. Fingers crossed. Right? And it's a good joke, but it never felt right because I hadn't written it. So I was like, oh, I'm not going to use this. There's also, I've given comedians jokes that I've then regretted because I've come up with an idea for a joke and I was like, oh, I can't use this. And I've given it to someone. Like, oh, cheers. And then I'm like, later on, I'm like, oh, fuck. That would be a great punchline for this joke. And, you know, I'm like,
yeah.
I think, can I reclaim that joke? jokes that I don't mind people, if only 5% of the audience get in an Edinburgh show is fine. So I'll reference it. It's like I had one show where I had this recurring joke where it was the first of it was, I was talking about like punching Nazis. I was like, you know, people say, oh, you can't punch a Nazi. I'm like, I think you can punch a Nazi. I think you should. I don't think you should shoot a Nazi, especially not a neo-Nazi, because they can dodge bullets in a really cool way. Right? Which is, I love that joke. I know, again, it's an Edinburgh show joke, I think. I wouldn't do it on stage necessarily.
The new Matrix is coming out soon so that people will know the reference.
Oh, is it?
There's a new one,
Oh, mate, I'm going to bring it back. Yeah. And I'd do that and it would get like half the audience. And then the joke was that I would keep doing throughout the show punchlines, which were Neo was the thing. So it was like, I'd talk about this type of art and I was like, Peter Paul Rubens or something. And I was like, oh, obviously, you know, a lot of people say that blah, 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 blah. Those are, you know, the neo romanticists, and obviously you don't want to shoot a neo romanticist, and you just keep doing it until like only one person is really laughing, and I'd throw them in like neoclassicism and
Neapolitan.
The final one was like Neapolitan ice cream, yeah. And you just do it until only one person's laughing, and I'm like, that person fucking loves it. This is great, and like jokes that sometimes on a it was always weird on a night. Like sometimes the routine hits differently and I'm like, oh, that's because I've delivered it differently or I've delivered it wrong with the wrong energy, right? And I can see why it's going to get a round of applause one night and like a mild titter the next night, which has always been a problem for me because like my delivery is pretty shit. But I had have jokes that some nights would just go silent and some nights would get such a good reaction. I'm like, that literally just depends who's in the room.
Yes.
The one that comes to mind was I talk about like, I don't know. I was talking about religion and I just throw in a joke about like, you know, hey, Catholicism, I don't want to really go there. But like, you know, because if you joke about Catholics, people get really angry. All you Catholics are like, our priests are innocent. And I was like, no, that's 13 of your popes. And it requires you to know that there have been popes called Pope Innocent. It doesn't matter that there's 13. The 13 is there to make you seem even more clever.
Yeah.
But some nights people are just pass it over. And that's fine. You put it in the middle of a phrase so it doesn't seem like I'm hitting a punchline. And then some nights you're like, is everyone here Catholic? Or is everyone here clever? Or is everyone here attuned to the rhythms of comedy? What is it? And again, I've never had a problem with doing that.
I think with one-liners, that's always going to be a problem at some point.
Yeah.
Because if I ever die or have a jokes that don't work, I don't let it ever bother me now, because I know that they all make sense as jokes.
Yeah.
So there's no problem with the joke. It's just I've said this on here before, but it's like, it's like people say you can't blame an audience, but you can. Like, it's their fault that they don't like my style of comedy, and it's my fault that I don't do what they like. It's just, but I can't change. It's what I do. Yeah. So I don't ever let it bother me now.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. The just to finish off the thought I had was with Dan and with Steve, they would always go through my Edinburgh scripts and just be like, you have too many jokes that make people feel dumb. Or like, there are too many cute jokes here. You can only have two or three jokes like that where the audience is going to go, oh, did I not get that? Then they're going to second guess themselves, or they're going to get annoyed with you. And so like, as I got more experienced, I was like, okay, I'm only going to have one joke a show, really, which might make other, because I like when one person feels really clever in the audience. One person laughs a lot. And like an example from the rap show, like I do this bit where I just kind of, I talk about how I'm jealous of rappers because they get air horns. They'll like do a line, they'll like say something, and then the DJ will be like, bah, 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 bah. Like, yeah. I feel that means they can get away with like pretty shit things they say on stage just because there's an air horn behind it to hype the audience up. So like, I feel like I should be able to do that with jokes. So I'm going to tell you some shit jokes with an air horn. I do like some real cheesy one-liners, which is one of my favorite one-liners to do at the moment. And, you know, like presumably you always have like a one-liner in your pocket. So when people go, tell us a joke, you just pull that one out. You're like, this is what they want as a joke. So like that joke, which leads off that section, is I'm taking a break from karate lessons. It's a hiatus. And the air horn works because if they don't get the joke, they laugh at the air horn, right? Pavlovian. So then I do a couple more shit jokes that get shitter and shitter. And then I have this joke that is a bit more obscure. And in the past, I would have done like this. I go, I get real pissed off that people say vaccines cause autism. That's definitely not the case. And I have evidence. I can prove it. I've been vaccinated on 18 separate occasions. And I could tell you the location of each clinic. I could tell you the time of day I had the injection. I could tell you the name of the nurse and the colors of the walls in the waiting room. I could tell you the name of every magazine on the rack, right? And I keep doing that until the whole audience has got, we get it, he's autistic, that's the joke. Whereas in the past, I would have just stopped at, I've been vaccinated on 15 separate occasions and I know the date of each one of them, whatever. I would have stopped there and been like, only the few people who can make that big mental leap to, ha-ha, because then I was like, they'll laugh more and feel clever. Whereas actually, by gently teasing out the joke until you explain it, everyone can join in.
I still
haven't avoided my love for niche jokes, because then that has tags, again, like the Dr. E joke that not everyone gets, because I'd be like, that's actually not a joke about autism, that's a joke about insufficient sample size. And if you only hear one joke about insufficient sample size, then you are part of the problem, right? Which again, like, that's alienating for some people. But like my first Edinburgh show, I had a review from Brian Donaldson that was like, Turner has this habit of coming up with a great joke and then undercutting it with a shit pun. And I was like, kind of fuck you, because one, puns are seen as lesser, which is bullshit, because actually they're the jokes that you tell a mate down the pub and they have a good laugh. And like the example he gave was, again, that first show was all about hip hop as well. And I was like, Jay-Z's early stuff is great. It's visceral. It's real. It's like he's a street correspondent. Now it's so materialistic. It just feels like he stepped into the booth and started rapping a receipt. And like, he really liked that, which was a joke that's not like, you'd not do that in a club. Mm. You do that in an Edinburgh show.
So
then, because I'd been working on the material in clubs, I was like, you know, I just do an impression of Jay-Z rapping about the things he owns. Like, I got so much money. I bought a muzzle for my pet duck. Nothing flashy, but it fits the bill. And you get a big, whoa. And he was like, oh, yeah. One example, he does this shit thing. And I was like, oh, fuck off.
That's...
that might not have been Brian Donaldson, actually. I know that he gave that David show a 3-star and was like, he didn't like when I started telling a story. He was like, oh, the one line is great. Why does he start telling this story? And I'm like, because I enjoy it. And one thing, you know, that I think I'm quite good at is when I read like a good review of it, not a good review, but like a well-written review. Like, I know Jay Richardson reviewed a couple of my shows, and every time I read his reviews, even though he'd given like 3 or 3.5 stars, I was like, oh, I do agree with you about everything right. you said. Yeah, yeah. You are right. Whereas, so which means I can read a review sometimes and be like, oh, I fundamentally disagree. Yeah, this is the show I want to do. You want it to be a different show, which is the similar thing of like, yeah, you perform for the audience, and if it's not what they want, then oh well.
Yeah, yeah, doesn't matter. Someone else will like it. Before we finish up, how did you change the tender joke?
Oh yeah. So that now I just use the same. Essentially, the wordplay is just that it's the tender that's the wordplay, right? Mm. That's what the pun is. So. Now I do that in a sequence of, it's actually one of my favorite jokes, a sequence of hip hop jokes, which has that Dr. Dre joke in, which has jokes about like musical taste, being younger and listening to hip hop as a young guy. And I like, my mum hates the music. She says that it's a different joke. She says the violent misogynistic lyrics and imagery make me a worse person. I told her to shut a bitch ass mouth. easy, nice laugh. Although, depending on the gig, I'll say cracker ass mouth, because apparently, you know, they're like, oh, that's more acceptable than saying bitch ass. I had that feedback from some people. They were like, oh, you can't say bitch ass. Cracker ass is much better. And it works either way. I prefer bitch ass. But then I'm like, yeah, she hated that the music was all guns, bitches, and bling. I don't see a problem with that. I love bitches and bling. I love women. I love money. I love my women like my money. Legal, tender.
Nice.
That's the joke.
That's nice.
And it works. It works nicely. And you get it works because you get a kind of ooh, because they're like, oh, what, you've brought up underage sex or whatever. Yeah, like, no, yeah. I'm saying legal. And then again, like in America, actually, you can tag that with and the Queen's face, which is nice. Or any country, and actually make a joke about their currency. In Australia, you know, add made of plastic, their money's made of. It's quite an easy joke to actually, you know. If I was gigging in Zimbabwe, I'd say going down at an alarming rate. You know, it's a fun little all purpose thing. But yeah, that's what I changed it to, and I was glad I could make it work.
So why did you hate Coin Collector? Was it just too obvious? Or just the rhythm?
I don't know. I think it was probably me being precious about it.
Mm. But I mean, the like, news way is more you anyway.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's just like, that's the joke I whip out when you're having a conversation about who's got the shortest joke or whatever. Like another similar joke, like Coin Collectors are tender lovers, or Coin Collectors they're tender lovers is for. My three word one is appraising crickets overrated. Right? Like that's...
Oh, yep, got you.
Yeah, exactly. It's not funny. Those short jokes aren't funny.
Jokes
right?
that are just one line are hard to get laughs from, I think.
Yeah.
But you did one earlier, that the dogma one.
But that has a much bigger line. Setup, though.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Like, you have to set it up. Sorry, my cat's here. Hey, Colonel Widdershins. This is I spoke about Colonel Widdershins, about how that thing is where you think everyone knows a word, but... everyone else doesn't know the word. Is there an urgent emergency? Oh no, you've brought him up here because I asked you. Thank you very much. We have the housekeepers are coming round, and so they have a tendency to leave the door open, and then he tries to escape. So whenever they're here, I'd try and keep him in here. I think it was probably me not wanting to. I don't know. Well, yeah, one line joke's hard, but yeah, that thing about coin collectors versus numismatist. Thing is, it's not a joke that would kill on stage, but that dogma's joke has a setup because you have to explain to them, like, I don't know, it had some setup about I've got a friend who believes that blah 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 blah. But I told him a crisis for life, not for dogmas.
Yeah,
it has to have that to really work.
I think with the one line ones, they're just not expecting the punch that quick sometimes. Mm. But I've got quite a few like that I don't ever do in my club set, like sergeant majors or attention seekers. And things like that, because it's just like it's just a statement, and it. I feel like they don't really.
Yeah.
Because I've got one, which is a Star Wars one, which is two words. It's just Chewie's tough. But never has got any sort of response.
Well, this is like that dogma's joke. Steve Bennett reviewed maybe that joke, but also just like an early set I did in general as more clever than it is funny, which is a phrase I love, right? Like, if I have a podcast, that's what it's getting called. And I loved that. I was like, yeah, it's a funny joke, but it's more clever. Like, because all I cared about was being clever and intelligent. Like, that's what happens when you raise a kid to be like, you're so clever, Christopher. Well done. Why are you becoming a comedian? Why not become a lawyer? But I was like, yeah, that is. And I think these jokes are that, right? And what's wrong with that? Like, if you think about all the kind of these great wits of the past, all these, you know, it's they're not telling jokes, they're telling bon mots or bon mots or however you pronounce it. And yeah, like you read a book of quotations, they're not funny. They're just smart things that people say. And I don't mind that. Now, yeah, I appreciate that you shouldn't be doing what I was doing, which was like trying to go to a weekend club and be like, oh, here are these clever jokes. But I don't know. That's also kind of staying true to what you want. Like, again, I think from early on, I was always like, well, I'm just going to tell jokes that I would like to hear.
Yes.
And fuck them if they don't want it, which, you know, I think was also why I was reluctant to kind of freestyle rap, because I was like, oh, this is crowd pleasing. Why would I want to do that?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Chris Turner!
Woo!
Hashtag Awuga. Chris Turner. So, good stuff. Lovely. Thank you, Chris Turner. I hope you all enjoyed that. Any feedback at Jokes with Mark, and then we will, if Joel lets me, if he lets me talk about the feedback.
I'll let you read out as much as I want to hear.
Yeah, well, and I'll do that. So hit your feedback. Let us know what you think about anything, about the podcast or about the jokes in specifically. I do believe, Joel, that this podcast, because I haven't listened back yet, was we were talking about the jokes a lot more than the rapping. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, if you want to hear more about his rapping, is this true, Joel?
It's true.
You can head over to patreon.com/jokeswithmark. And we just uploaded another episode on there. A little bonus.
Weekly bonus. Yeah. Go and sign up. If you're not signed up, you're missing so much bonus content.
As little as £3 a month. Go and support the podcast and you get loads of cracking bonus audio. So head over there. As you're rushing me, Joe, shall we just... Anything more from you, Joe?
Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything more from you, Mark?
Nothing more from me, Joe. Hashtag Awuga, everybody.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.